Welcome to Voices of Resilience, a special series from the Vital Voices podcast, where we're sharing stories of courage, commitment, innovation, and perseverance from women leaders in unprecedented crisis. I'm your host, Elise Nelson.
Today, I have the pleasure of speaking with Vital Voices' own Zoe Dean Smith. Here at Vital Voices, Zoe leads our economic empowerment and entrepreneurship team, which creates and coordinates world-class programs that provide training, resources, and networks to women in business and social enterprises around the world. And though Zoe does an incredible job helping to execute our mission here at Vital Voices, today we're actually going to talk to her about her personal career path and really how she holds true to her personal mission despite uncertainty. Zoe's career path has been anything but a straight line. She has done many different things, but I think she's always shown us that the more diverse the experiences, the more interesting the path, the better the person. So Zoe, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Elise. I'm very excited to be here.
So as I mentioned, of course, you've had such an interesting career. Water ski instructor, head of Vital Voices Economic Development. You've done so many interesting things. Maybe you could talk a little bit about how you've sort of lived outside the box in many ways, and just a little bit about your career and maybe what brought you to Vital Voices.
Okay, thank you, Elise. Well, you know, it's interesting, whenever I think about career paths and I think about the perfect career path, for me, it always looks like a very straight line. So for example, someone who leaves school and decides they want to study law and off they go and that's what they do for the next 30 years. And that's definitely not been my path. I think I'm on about my sixth career path chapter at this stage. When I left school, I spent 13 years studying and working in the field of architecture in Swaziland, in the UK, and in South Africa, where I was designing buildings, supervising the construction of multi-story apartment blocks, working with engineers. And it was a really great, very interesting time. And my very first boss, I still remember, because he was a great guy who really stretched me. And my very first job, I thought I was going to get a little house to do the drawings of. He gave me a multi-story apartment block. And I've never forgotten that, sort of having someone who believed in me right from the beginning and made me believe in myself. So 13 years in architecture. And then I took a year out at the age of 30. I decided, actually, I had a really cool boyfriend who water skied. He taught me how to ski. And I thought it would be great to go and be a water ski instructor at Club Med. So I applied for the job and I sent this crazy, crazy CV with all the things I'd done in sport and in theater. And I got the job actually without an interview, and I loved it. I loved the work. I loved the place. The island of Mauritius, so what could be better than that? My office every day was a speedboat on the Indian Ocean, so it was really, really cool. But I left because of a boss. In Club Med, you have the person who runs the Club Med village is called the chef de village, and my second chef de village was someone who was just crazy, crazy guy. And I just got to a stage where I felt like I couldn't actually stay there. I didn't respect him. I felt really uncomfortable. And so there were no other villages for me to go to at the time. So I decided, okay, I'll go back home to Swaziland and wait to see if they find me another village with a different chef de village. So I went back into my previous job in architecture. And about a year later, the company downsized, and I was one of four people who was downsized out of a job. But my boss found me my next job, which was working as a human resources and administration manager of a microfinance institute. So they're sort of like a completely different shift into something that I never would have thought. And that came about because in the architectural practice, work had got so quiet that I'd started doing the admin for the architectural practice. So boss found me my next job. And then that microfinance institution went into liquidation. But while I was still working there, I produced the Rocky Horror Show. I'm not sure if you know.
Of course.
So I produced the Rocky Horror Show at the Swaziland Theatre Club, and we had a cast of about 40 and a backstage crew of about 30 people. So it was quite a big production for a small local production. And I cast a woman by the name of Jenny Thorne in the role of Magenta. Very successful production. Moving back to my career path, when I left the Microfinance Institute, I was headhunted to be the operations manager of an industrial catering company. They were looking for someone who had organizational skills. So again, another sort of very unexpected change. And I did that for just under a year, but I felt really out of my depth. I didn't know anything about industrial catering. I could figure out all the sort of the spreadsheets that they wanted me to fill in every week, working with different industrial kitchens in country clubs and in hospitals, etc. But I felt like I didn't know enough about the nitty-gritty of the business. And I thought, you know what, I need to leave before I make a really big mistake here that costs the company money. So I left, and shortly after I left, I was looking around for a job. And I bumped into Jenny Thorne, the woman who I had cast as Magenta. And she said, you know, what are you up to? If you're looking for a job, why don't you come and join me in my handcraft company? I'm looking for someone to come and help me scale up what I'm doing. And at the time, Jenny was working with about 600 rural Swazi women, making beautiful handcrafted product, tableware products and homeware products, which she was exporting to about 20 countries. So I joined her. And it was a beautiful, beautiful relationship where I was the one who's very organized and sort of doing all the organizing the workshop and dealing with customers. And Jenny was very creative. She did all the product design, and she loved working out in the mountains with the rural women. And this was the first time I had ever been in a job where I felt that the job was bigger than me just earning a salary at the end of the month. Now, my every single move that I made in my business had many other people relying on me to not make mistakes. And over the next few years, we grew the business from working with 600 women to about 770 at the largest. And at that time, we also used to bring in a lot of design interns to do product development with us. And we brought in a young woman called Philippa, who came in 2001. And Jenny, in 2003, got very sick. And at this time, Philippa was dating Jenny's middle son, Sholto. And Jenny passed away within about 6 weeks of being diagnosed with leukemia, which was a complete shock. We had a workshop staff of about 30. And by this time, we had about 700 women we were working with. And I felt like I had the burden of those 700 women on my shoulders. And as you know, Elise, in Swaziland, it probably still has the highest HIV infection in the world. And we knew that each of those women artisans were supporting an average of about 8 dependents. So this business was supporting approximately 5,000 rural Swazi people. So while I had joined Jenny thinking, oh, I'll do this for a couple of years and then I'll move on, when she died, I felt that very big burden on my shoulders. But it wasn't a heavy burden. I was pleased to be there. This was the first time I was at a job where I felt like I was having an impact on the community in Swaziland. And so I thought about Philippa and whether she might like to become my partner in the business, because she was like a mini Jenny. So she joined me in the business, which was perfect. And I remember a conversation I had about a year later. We were at a trade show about a year after Jenny died, and Philippa was doing such incredible design work that we were winning gold awards for our product design. And I was standing at a trade show overlooking our trade show booth with a friend of mine, Eugenie. And Eugenie turned around to me and she said, you know, I wonder how much Philippa would have blossomed if Jenny were still here. And she wasn't saying that Jenny was holding Philippa back, but that Philippa now had space to grow. And I think that that comment that Eugenie made has probably been one of the biggest, biggest factors in my life when I think about business and when it's time to change, when it's time to change something. And so Back to Gone Rural, in about 2005, we started working with the International Finance Corporation. They loved our social enterprise model, and they started bringing me to Washington, D.C. and various places. And in October, I think it was September of October 2005, is when I met you, Elise, in Ghana at a conference. A moment I will never in my life forget because of the story of the necklace. And we had a conversation, and then I went back to Swaziland. In 2006, we took on somebody else in the business, because we got so big, we needed a third person in management. And I kind of felt like I was reaching my glass ceiling within the business. And we had been promised a grant to cover the salary of that third person. And then that grant never materialized. So there we were, stuck with this business in sort of a financial dire straits. And I was thinking, I remembered Eugenie's conversation, that comment about, am I holding this back? And I thought, okay, of the three of us who are in management, who is holding this business back, or who could be? And I realized it was me. You know, the two other women were young, they had new ideas, they were fresh. And I felt that I'd really reached my glass ceiling and it was time to move on. So I spoke to the International Finance Corporation about this because they'd started investing in our business and they freaked out. They said, no, you can't go. You're the boss, you're the captain of this ship. And I said, no, Philip is more than ready to take over from me. And they said, okay, well, we know that you've been wanting to start a foundation for this business because you want to do social upliftment programs. So we'll pay your salary for a year for you to launch that foundation, mentor Philippa into her role as the managing director of Gone Rural, and find your successor in the foundation. And I said, of course. And so that's what I did. And in that year, I also reconnected with you, Vital Voices, Elise, at Vital Voices, the summit in Cape Town, which was such an eye-opener for me because it was my first experience of mentoring. There were 20 girls from all over the African continent there who'd come for 2 days before the summit for a mentoring program. And then during the summit, where we had 200 incredible women leaders from all over the continent, these young girls were standing up in plenary sessions and talking about what they were going to do, the changes that they were going to make when they went back home. And I couldn't believe it. My mind was blown. So I went back home and thought, how can I start this same kind of thing in Swaziland? And I think that's when I sort of became a squeaky wheel with you, Elise, voices about, you know, how can I get more involved? How can I do things? And when we launched our mentoring program in Swaziland, we were thrilled that you actually came to Swaziland for our big launch. It was a super, super exciting event. At the end of the year of me launching that foundation, I started doing consulting work with Vital Voices, with TechnoServe, and with the International Finance Corporation. And that was a remarkable time as well. With Vital Voices, I traveled the world. We developed the Entrepreneurs and Handcrafts program, working with women who were running export-ready handcraft businesses. And it was extraordinary. It was a journey I would never have dreamed that I would be on. And then all of that funding came to an end at the same time. And I landed up working as program manager for a multinational company running their Africa program, doing projects across the entire African continent, 42 countries working in water, health, and education. So it felt like the foundation that I'd launched in Swaziland was my training wheels for this bigger foundation. And I loved the work, loved the work, but unfortunately, another toxic boss, like my boss at Club Med, and I actually left because of my boss, because it was so uncomfortable being there. And this was also a really interesting health lesson, because I would go into work every day dreading going in, and I knew that this was impacting on my health. And since I turned 40, I started having mammograms, and I'd always had clear mammograms. And the one that I had after I left that job was the first time I had little white spots come up on my mammogram. And they said to me, listen, you need to get this sorted out. And I went and I had a small lump removed, probably about the size of a glass marble, removed off my chest. And my boss's name was William. And when I had that surgery, I considered it as being getting William off my chest. And I always remember that also, the thing about if you're in a situation that you know that is impacting on your health, you need to make a change. And the beauty of that story is that I resigned from that job on the 31st of October. And then on the 1st of November, I got an email from you, Elise. It was November 2012. And you said, what are you doing? Let's have a chat. We've got a position here in Washington, D.C. we'd like you to apply for. And of course, the rest is history. I moved to D.C. in March 2013. And I'm doing work that I really, really, really love. So it's been, as I've said, a very unexpected journey. When I left school, I had no idea that I would land up doing women's economic empowerment work in Washington, D.C. It was probably, if you'd said that to me, I would have said, are you crazy? So unexpected.
Yeah, and I think what's really incredible about you, Zoe, is intention. And a lot of times I think when we think about intention, we think about, okay, I'm going to put an intention out there for my life, this big, big, big goal, and then I'm going to achieve it. And I think with you, it's a lot of sort of mini intentions, right? I'm sure you have the big intention, but it's also like in this job, okay, this is my intention. And I even remember back in those early days when we were working with you and you were still living in Swaziland, you would say, you know, I think I'd like to come to Washington and, you know, work yes. full time with Vital Voices around leadership and mentoring. And I'm like, yes. Okay. You know, not knowing at all how we would do that, considering yes. that, you know, you would need to have a special visa. And, you know, indeed, you know, you had that in your head. And so I think, you know, for me, you represent so much of that power of intention, that we often put up so many blocks in our way. But if we don't believe that we can do something, the world is never going to conspire in our favor, right?
Yep.
So deeply important. So what is your ultimate takeaway from that path?
You know, Elise, I think intention is a big thing. And as I look at this journey, it was really only when I joined Gone Rural that I was doing something that was for the greater good. It wasn't just for me to earn a salary or to be kind of happy with my job. But as I reflect on it, I think that I've always trusted my gut and I've followed my heart. And I guess trusted in the process. And sometimes I think, you know, I've resigned from, I think, two or three jobs where I didn't know what the next thing was going to be. But I just had a trust that the process, the universe would bring whatever I needed next and give me the tools that I needed for the next thing. And the one thing that I do know very clearly that, you know, since I started working at Gone Rural, that took me into this journey of working with women. And I've realized that if you set an intention, if it's in the service of others, chances are greater than it's going to come to fruition. You're actually going to manifest it. Whereas if it's just something for you on your own, maybe not so much. So that I think is the biggest thing. And then also the other question I think is also how to recognize when you're not growing. You know, when is it, when have you hit that plateau? And then thinking, okay, if I've got a completely new blank canvas in front of me, where can I add value and where will I gain value? So it's got to be that win-win. So I think that's it. But really the service of others is the big thing for me. And I see it across all the women that we work with in Vital Voices. The ones that shine, that get through all the tough times are the ones that are working in the service of others.
So true. So you, I think, offer such important insight for all of us right now. It's such an unsettling time. Many people have lost their jobs. Others maybe are afraid they're going to lose their jobs. We don't know when things will totally reopen. We know life is never going to go back to normal, at least what it was, right? We don't know when schools will open back up. How have you relied on those strengths of sort of putting your faith in the future? And sort of how do you set intention when maybe you don't know what the world will look like?
You know, that's a really interesting question. In about 2002, you just reminded me of this story. The roof of my house burned down. I lived in a beautiful thatched house, and the roof of the house burned down, and Jenny Thorne was still alive at the time. And the house was a hot mess. And she said to me after the fire, we put the fire out with, you know, 6 fire engines, 2 sugarcane water trucks, all sorts. It was a huge drama. She said to me, you know, a fire is a cleansing. And I thought to myself, yeah, I had my arms folded and I said, well, I don't know what's so cleansed about my house, which is a big mess right now. But what it did make me think was, what do I have in my life? You know, having to sort of try and get all my possessions out of the house made me think about, what do I have in my life in terms of people in my life? And what do I want in my life? So it's that kind of a spring cleaning kind of thing. And as we've been talking to our Vital Voices women over the past few weeks, as we've been navigating this totally unexpected story, I've been thinking about that and thinking about what a real gift it is. While it probably doesn't feel like it's a gift right now, I'm sure for just about every single entrepreneur that there is on the planet, they're not thinking that. But I do think it does give us that opportunity to think differently and think about what is the new normal. What do I want to do more of? And, you know, even thinking about the planet and climate change and how this is an opportunity. If we see all the things that are all the things in nature that are starting to come out again, you know, and I've heard lots of people talking about they hear more bird calls, that kind of thing, is to think about, as we rethink what we're doing, how can we incorporate the planet into that as well? And it's what I'm really hoping that we're going to hear from a lot of entrepreneurs that we work with, is how they're doing that, how they're weaving that into their new business ideas. So I do think it's that, and it's a great time to start again, you know, start a whole new chapter. And I'm really excited to see the new business ideas that are coming up. I mean, one of the really cool ones I saw the other day was people are starting to bring back drive-in theaters. What can we learn from history, and what are the new innovations? And one last innovation that I do want to share is one of the women that we've worked with in Dublin works with her company is called Dental Tech, and they work with elderly people with dental care. And when we worked with her a couple of years ago in our Global Ambassadors program, 3D printing was something that was sort of like in the distance, far distance for her. And now in this situation, she's actually started using 3D printing to make dentures and things, which is just mind blowing, you know?
Yeah.
Things that people can pull out of those sort of like ideal, well, I'll do that when I'm ready or when I have 5 minutes. Now's the opportunity to really stretch those imaginations.
It is interesting because I think some people take this moment to innovate, right? And to kind of find the opportunity in a very difficult situation and a very difficult time. And I think, you know, others, you know, it is very hard. It is very hard to get beyond the anxiety, the challenges. What advice would you have for them about how to make that shift from feeling almost paralyzed by the fear of the unknown, and on the other end of the spectrum, just mad innovation around the unknown?
Yeah, it's a really, really interesting question. You know, one of the first things I think, and we hear this and we're seeing it so often, is I think a lot of people are feeling like a hamster that is galloping on a wheel right now, just trying to keep its head above water. And what we're hearing is that people are not taking enough time to just give themselves time to breathe. And I mean, literally that. I was just on a call earlier today with someone who said that they have been working for 10 weeks flat out, not taking weekends. And on Friday, they took their first day out. And I think that one thing that everybody could do is just to give themselves like 15 minutes, half an hour in every day to step outside, if you're allowed to step outside wherever you are right now. meditate, just find some quiet time to just take care of yourself first before even worrying about anything else. Then the other thing is, I think our Vital Voices network is incredible, and there are a lot of people who are innovating right now. And I get so excited when I read our Voices of Resilience newsletters each week about all the exciting things that other people are doing. So I do think, to your point, Elise, that now is the time to have very open minds and to almost kiss goodbye the old way and the old normal, and you know, release it with love and invite those new ideas and new energy to come in and see what other people are doing. And do some stretching in terms of imagination, you know, things that maybe you hadn't thought about, or, you know, something you were going to do in 20 years time when you've exhausted this business or whatever it is, but is to really maybe even start listening to different podcasts that you normally wouldn't have done, but really stepping out of your comfort zone would be the thing for me. Because if you think about, if you are stuck focused in on trying to fix something that's not working, it's not working. You know, It has to change.
You know, I've also found, I think it's so important to surround yourself with people who are able to sort of see the forest through the trees, right? Who aren't sort of lingering in the space of the unknown, or, you know, really in a space of darkness, but can see the light and are trying to figure out how do we get there, right?
Yep.
And I feel like, you know, leading an organization with a huge network, that's my job. I have to stay focused on that, right?
Yep.
And so it is so important who you surround yourself with, because you know, obviously you need to be looking at the extraordinary difficulties right now, but at the same time, you have to keep your eyes on the future. Otherwise, there is no future, right?
Yep.
So you have done these extraordinary workshops with Vital Voices that I know have just totally transformed people's path, this life map session that you've done with now probably hundreds of women and maybe some men as well, certainly some men as well as part of the Vital Voices staff. Can you talk a little bit about that? I mean, what I feel like you've done is really kind of pulled together your life and your life experiences and the meanings that you've gained along the way and put those into a very helpful framework. And so first, I'd love for you to talk a little bit about that framework and then talk about the impact. You know, what changes have you seen people put into their life as a result?
Thank you, Elise. Yeah, it is a super powerful tool. And I have to, first of all, give credit. It's built on a tool that someone shared with me many years ago, a little chart. So basically what it is the holistic life map. It provides a framework from which one can plan your life and focus on the goals that you want to achieve in the short term, medium term, and long term. So it's all about setting intentions. And I always think about it as being like a business plan or a strategic plan for your life. And so that it can include your business, but there are so many other aspects to it, which include, there are basically 8 categories that I have that we focus on when we're doing this workshop. The first one is health and wellness. The second one is spirituality, faith, religion. The next is around adventure and leisure and fun. Then the fun one, which always sparks a lot of conversation, is romance and marriage and all of those beautiful things. Then there's your sort of home environment, the physical home environment. What does that look like? Then there's education and personal development. And then your career path and business. And then the last one is personal finance rather than business finance, because business finance fits in a business plan. So it's all about those, and it's about setting those goals. So thinking about kind of what do I want to achieve in each of those, and setting a what, a how, and a when for each of them. And it's a really, really cool exercise. I love doing it when we're doing it with a group of people and you get to hear everybody's different ideas. But the other interesting thing about it is what we do at the beginning of it is we do a little sort of a quite a scary exercise where the question that we ask is, if you had 24 hours to live, what would you do in those 24 hours? And it's for me, it feels like almost like a slap in the face kind of question. But it does bring everybody's priorities to the fore. And most people say, well, I do want to spend that time with my friends and my family, tell people how much I love them and all that kind of thing. And that's, for me, sort of like a great way to think about, okay, what are the things that I value? And what are the things that I want more of? So this exercise just goes through that in each of those categories. So for example, a health one would be, and actually how you write these goals, you start with imagining that you're going to attain perfection, like 100% of what that thing is. So you would write it down, you'd say something like, to attain my vision of perfect health, I commit to a what, a how, and a when. An example could be, I know I need to drink more water, so I'm going to start drinking at least 32 ounces of water every day. How am I going to do that? I'm actually going to buy a water bottle that's 32 ounces, and I'm going to make sure that I drink that every day. And when am I going to start? Today. So it's really, really simple, but incredibly, incredibly powerful. And you asked for a couple of examples of sort of success stories. The one that I find really, really interesting is how many babies have actually been born out of this? It's funny. When I've asked people that question of like, if you had 24 hours to live, what would you do? And they realize, oh, I haven't had kids yet. You know, do I want them? Don't I want them? Yes, I do. Okay, so I need to make a plan about that. So that ties into a whole bunch of things, like how are you going to manage your time to make that happen? Maybe there's a touch on what happens in your romantic life, but it just gives people clarity about those things. And it also gives them the opportunity to plan out a calendar. You know, is that going to be a 3-year project? You know, that I want to get all of this stuff in place by the end of next year. And then that is what we're going to be working on. So I really, really love it as a tool. And yeah, it's just great. I get so many stories back from people, how they've changed things, you know, maybe even changed careers because they've realized that the work that they're doing right now actually doesn't serve them. And there's this thing that's a much bigger pattern that they never realized before. So they go off and do that, or they want to start a foundation and they realize that they actually need to go and do a master's in something to have the skills that are needed for that. And so they go off and do that.
Mm. Tell us again, there's seven, is that right? There are eight core areas. So the
first one is health and wellness. The next is the spirituality and faith. Number three, which most people rate themselves really low on, is leisure and fun and adventure. Number four is romance. Number five is your home environment. Number six is education and your personal development. Have you learned everything? Do you have all the tools you need? Number seven is career and business. And number eight is finance. And then a few people, when I've done this exercise, have said they would add other categories like paying it forward. Do I want to set goals of how I want to pay forward in my life? What do those activities look like? And
sort of the legacy piece.
Yes, the legacy piece. Mm. And then also a section on friends and family, you know, if that doesn't fit into any of the other areas, that often comes up. Like, I want a special section specifically for that. What am I going to do then?
Mm. Wonderful. Wow. Well, and I hope people could potentially even just use this tool as they, you know, just as you've walked through it. There's certainly nothing like participating in it with you. Let's say someone's listening to this and they think, wow, Zoe, I would love to go through that exercise right now. I'm so in need of it. I don't know what to make of my life in the midst of all this. Or maybe I know what to make of my life. I don't like the direction it's moving. I need to do a shift. Can they take this with you online? How could they
Yes, of course. Yes, I'd be very happy to do that and to work with the Vital Voices team. If there's anybody listening who would like to do that, love to do it. I've actually done a couple of webinars recently for our Vital Voices Young Leaders Council, and would love to do that. However, if people want to do it at home now, well, if they have the time, I would say the best thing to do is to make space in your calendar. Give yourself a couple of hours where you don't have any other distractions. Maybe find a beautiful place to go and do this exercise. If you're allowed out, go into a park, somewhere that you're not going to be disturbed, and really write the goals. Maybe start with 3 to 5 goals in each of those different areas, but digging down to the tips of your toes of what do you really, really, in the bottom of your heart, want to achieve in your life. And start writing them. And you could even do it with a couple of friends, you know, do it on a Zoom call as an exercise and brainstorm with each other. I love doing this with other people because I love hearing from other people and I learn from their ideas and I think, oh, I'm going to borrow that. There are two ways. I'm sure there are many more ways than that to do it.
And so what advice would you give to people who say, I cannot live my goals right now. I cannot even begin to think about this. I've got kids I'm homeschooling and taking care of. I have a job. I have people I'm taking care of. Things are uncertain with my job. I know someone who's sick or in the hospital. Like, why is it more important than ever to actually have clarity around your goals and set intentions? Even in this uncertain time, why is it more important than ever? And what advice do you have for people who say, I can't be bothered. I just need to get through each day.
You know, it's a really, really interesting question, Elise. And it always makes me think of when you get on a plane and they talk about if we have a crash or whatever it is, and you need to take that face mask, that air mask, and you look after yourself first. There's this beautiful expression, fill your own cup before you share. If your glass is half empty, you deplete your own reserves. If your glass is full and overflowing, you have an abundance to share. And I think that that is critically important right now, because we know people are running themselves ragged looking after so much. And I can almost guarantee that almost all of those people are not taking care of themselves. So you are the most important person in your life. You might think that everybody needs you, but if you're not taking care of yourself, you're not going to be there for anybody else. So it is important. So I personally think of this as being a gift to yourself. And it almost goes to the point of like, do I still want to be around in the next X number of years? And if so, how important do I consider myself? I'm doing this. And maybe you start with, okay, I'm gonna set 3 goals every day, 3 small goals each day. It doesn't have to be the whole exercise of all 8 categories, but 3 small goals, start small and build up, but make the time. Give yourself that gift of time, just as you may be giving yourself the gift of 5 minutes of meditation. Give yourself this gift and fill that cup, fill your own cup so that you can be strong for everybody else.
This has been such a joy, Zoe. Thank you for taking the time to do this today and really to share your great wisdom, your intention, your holistic life map with those listening. Thank you.
Thank you, Elise. Can I share one last little idea?
Yes, please.
It's based on a tweet from Marianne Williamson from a few years ago, where she said, fill the room with love before you enter, and you will most likely get the outcome that you want. And I share this when I do present the holistic life map. And how I imagine it is, let's say I'm going into a meeting that I know might be a little bit uncomfortable for the people in the room. I imagine a dry ice machine. And I imagine it's pushing out pinky silver light into that room. And I stand outside the room and I think about what is the goal that I want to get from this meeting? What is my intention? What is my outcome that I desire from this meeting? And so sending in all of that love, that pinky silver light, and almost every single time I come out of that meeting or that whatever it is with what I had hoped to achieve, and people pick up on that energy. And I share it, and I promise you, if you look at all my WhatsApp groups that I'm on, in Vital Voices groups, if they've attended that life map, that's what everybody talks about, that pinky silver light, and how they get their families to use it, their children to use it, and how it makes them feel good, and it just uplifts everyone. So
that's great advice.
Vision.
And it is so much, it goes back to intention, right? Not necessarily to know the outcome in the room, but to know that the outcome will be pure, that it will come from a place of love and
yes,
and an intention for goodness.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Zoe. I so enjoyed this. Thank you.
Thank you, Elise.
Thanks for listening to the special edition of the Vital Voices podcast. We hope that you're doing all you can to keep yourselves, your families, your teams, and your communities safe and healthy. If you'd like to support our work with women leaders in this country and around the world, you can donate to Vital Voices on our website at vitalvoices.org. Or you can text VITAL, V-I-T-A-L, to 41444. That's VITAL to 41444. Stay safe and remember that we will get through this unsettling time together.